So this is Parsha, the Parsha Tuchokosai. We know we have the Tochacha, and the Tochacha is actually broken into two distinct parts. What's interesting is they both have an almost identical introduction. As the Pasuk Yudalid, Perchafa Pasuk Yudalid tells us, "V'im lo tishmu li, v'lo ta'asu es kol ha-mitzvos ha'il," if you don't listen to me or obey me, and you don't do these mitzvos. And then later on it tells us, in Pasuk Chav Zayin, the second part of the Tochacha, again an introduction, V'im bezos lo tishmu li. Again, if you don't listen, if you don't obey me, v'alachta mi b'keri. And you think, yeah, it's not even, it's keri, as Rashi explains, it's not even a punishment. It's just sort of chaotic. It just sort of happened. What's interesting is that we find in both instances that this Tochacha is introduced with this word of tishmu. And what makes this word so interesting is the word shamoa is a homonym, right, in Hebrew. We know it has a dual meaning. It means both to obey, and it also means to listen, to hear. And the truth of the matter is, these two things are intricately connected and linked. The lack of obedience, the disobedience, the source of the disobedience, and the resulting tochacha really comes, Chazal explains, from a lack of shmiah. From a lack of listening. The obeying comes because we didn't go ahead. We may have heard, but we didn't listen. And there's a very fine but very important distinction between those two. As we find by the Eved Ivri, right? When he goes ahead and he wants to sell himself into perpetual servitude, it says, Ozen zu shasham al har Sinai. Ozen zu, what do you mean, this person? So the Sfas Emes goes in and explains because it stayed in his ear. Yeah, he heard, but he didn't listen. He didn't go ahead and he didn't internalize that message. I think today, one of the most glaring lacks out there today is the world's ability to listen. We've lost the art of listening. To hear, we constantly hear. We're constantly a stream of noise and 24-hour news stations. We're bombarded. But to really listen, and I'll tell you when this really was brought home to me. I was having a very interesting conversation during the summer. I work here in a summer program, and I was speaking to a very intelligent kid who started complaining to me. He said, my father doesn't listen to me. He was so upset, and my father doesn't listen. What do you mean he doesn't listen to me? Of course he doesn't listen to you. Do you try to speak to him? He said, of course I speak to him. So I said, yeah, so he listens to you? The boy said, no, my father hears me, he doesn't listen to me. I said, what do you mean? How do you know? He says, because whenever I speak to my father, he's always doing something else. Either he's on his phone, and yeah, he's hearing me, but he's not really listening to me. The ability to go ahead and to listen. You know, we know that there's that concept of Shema Yisrael, the Shema Yisrael, hear B'nai Yisrael. There's the concept we know of the voice that emanates every day from Har Sinai, but somehow that voice, that call of HaKadosh Baruch Hu has somehow been lost. You know, we have the inability to move our antennas properly. And I saw such an interesting thing. The guys played a little trick on me. I didn't know about it, but there's something called the mosquito ringtone. The mosquito ringtone is a ringtone done at 17 megahertz, and they say after the age of 23... you can't go ahead, or maybe it's 26, from 20 to 26. After that, you can't hear it anymore. So I said, come on, you know, you don't need. Number one, what happens? The guy goes to a little website, goes, now, presses it. I go, okay, start it. He goes, the whole shear starts cracking up. Rabbi, you don't hear that? I said, come on, what? I said, no, I know this game. This is the game where everyone starts going like this, moving their mouths, pretending they're speaking, but they're not. Like, come on, there's nothing there. I go, wait a second. We call in a third party, guy from Nolan. He said, tell me when you hear this noise. They press it. I make him close his eyes. I hear it. Oh my goodness. And they have a thing. 30 years old. 40 years old. Number one, just the reality to see that the physical body is breaking down. That I've lost the sensitivity in my ears. Although the truth is, with twins, you know, it's not a chiddush. You know what I'm saying? You know,
a bunch of people here know. You know, it's not a, this is not a, this is not like what losing the hear, but it's shocking, you know, that there could be a noise out there that you, that it's going, and everyone else is hearing it, but I've lost the ability to hear it. It's the same idea. That voice that, that emanates from HaKadosh, from Har Sinai, every single day, that cries over the destruction, it's there every day and says, "Whoa, where are my children? Why haven't they done tshuva?" It's out there. Every day it's being broadcast, but we don't move our antennas around. We've lost the sensitivity to pick up on it, to truly listen to it. And this is truly, you know, I have a Talmud of mine. He actually works for his father. And his father brings him into a very successful business. And they were going to a very important, you know, convention, a meeting. And this was like his son's introduction into the business. And the father, you know, kept warning him, "Listen, you know, you got to do a good job. Please, there are a lot of high-powered people here. It's very important. You got to..." And he said he was so nervous, so nervous. And he gets to this meeting and all these people. And he was so nervous and flustered. What did he do? He's all these, you know, much older than him. Years of... He sat and what did he do? He would just listen to them. And even when he disagreed with opinions of theirs, he'd bit his tongue and be like, "Yeah, whoa, I understand. That's a fantastic idea, really." And, you know, the whole night he spent going from one person to the next and introduce himself and just, you know, listen and bounce ideas. "Oh, that's great. And really, why do you think that?" And okay, the end of the night comes and he thinks, okay, flubbed it. No great chidushim of his, nothing. He basically sat there really, you know, shaking his head. He gets in the car on the way home with his father. His father says to him, "I am so proud of you." He says, "This woman, she came over and told me, wow, your son is so charismatic. What a charisma, such a dynamic young man. Another guy, what fantastic ideas." All he did was sit and shake his head to this guy's ideas. All he did was listen. And this went ahead, and this, you know, his father, "Now I know the business is going to be, you're going to be great at this." What a chiddush it was to him. He said he learned something so important from this. And this is really, I'll just end with a story. If I told the story again, I apologize, but it's one of those stories I never forget and I never tire of telling it. We were doing yeshiva video, and there was a person, Ramat Beit Shemesh, by the name of Alan Duchin, who was doing the video for us. And I have a minhag that whenever I meet someone, I always ask him, "Give me the best story. Especially if he does something like interesting, out of the box. Alan, give me your best story." He goes, "You want my best story?" I said, "Yeah, give me your best story." He's a very interesting guy. He does videos now. He does finding lost funds. So the guy's going to have something good. He says to me, he was one of the lead camera people and for something called the Shoah Project. It was funded by Steven Spielberg. And what they did is they went ahead before all the survivors are gone. All over, they have teams all over the world, South America, North America, you know, Middle East, you know, collecting these testimonies. Apparently, if you would press play on the, and it was a never-ending tape, they have over 12 years of testimony, because in another few years, it's all gone. So what happens is he would go ahead, and he was very careful. He says, "Listen, a lot of these testimonies, some people will never speak before and will never speak again, you know, tell over what happened, excruciating stories." And but you know, he went ahead, he said, "Listen, I don't know." He had a whole checklist, make sure all the equipment's working. He says, "I don't know who's going to go ahead and who's going to listen to all this testimony." He says, "The fact is that this is my job." Many of the camera crews would set up the camera, and they would often have family members with them, you know, children would come who really never heard their parents' story and would sit there with them. And they would set up the camera, come back in an hour later, 2 hours later, give a phone, call me, you know, "When you're finished, you know, go to a makoled, you know, go ahead and..." It could be difficult listening to testimony day after day. He said, "Listen, I don't know who's going to listen to this. I sat through every..." And I would listen. I would cry with the people. I found it extremely emotional, he said, as a frum Jew especially. And he says he has a couple in Kfar Saba. This couple, the wife had spoken before about experience. The husband refused to never speak about his experiences. But for this project, the Shoah Project, for it to go ahead for all of history, you know, to go into the archives, for it to be documented, he was willing to go ahead and to tell a story. So this Alan Duchin said he comes, he sets up his camera, and he goes ahead And first the wife speaks, and she tells a story, one camp, a second camp. And then it comes time for her husband to speak. And it's very hard. She has her arm around him, and he starts telling his story. And he, as he's telling it, he goes from completely unemotional to becoming extremely emotional as he speaks about a wife and children he had before the war that were lost, and one camp, and then a labor camp. And as he's going, he's telling, the hours are going by, and Alan Duchin's listening. He's crying with the ink. He's captivated that he's so focused on the story. He'd keep looking down at the camera. The man is finally getting towards his liberation. He looks at the camera, his heart drops. The camera went off. The battery was out. He's like, oh no. He doesn't know when it went out. He says, on the spot, he says, I'm so sorry. What? The camera's not working. Like, what? He says, the battery, it must have gone out. They say, when? He goes, I don't know. They're clearly very upset. I'm so sorry. He says, it's been a hard day. He says, I'm sorry. He just packing up the stuff. He's going to get out of it. He keeps a poly, feels terrible. Gets the camera packed up. He's going ahead. He's leaving the apartment. He turns to the wife, says, is there any way I could come back? She says, I can't tell you how difficult it was to get him to tell the story the first time. You know, now he's just ready to, you know. I'm so, okay. You know, she says, call in a few weeks. He goes back. He feels terrible. Terrible, terrible. A few weeks later, he doesn't stop thinking about it every day. He's thinking about how did this happen? He's plaguing his head. Calls back a few weeks later, says, well, is it possible I could go ahead? I could come. I know it's me. She says, you can come again. They make up a time. He brings, like, you know, three batteries with him, you know. He goes ahead. He gets to the house. He sets up the camera. He got her testimony. Most of his testimony was lost. And again, he's going to go ahead. He sets up the camera. And he's about to start. And the woman just says, you know, can I speak to you outside for a minute? He says, sure. She says, before you start, I have to thank you. He says, what do you mean? I want you to know. After you went ahead, after you left, my husband, we've been married over 50 years. My husband, as long as I've been married to him, has not slept through the night. Every single night, the middle of the night, he would get up screaming in the middle of the night. It's called night terror. Every single night. After you went ahead, after that taping, you sat, you listened, you cried with him. That night is the first night I woke up the next morning, I turned to my husband. I said, you didn't cry. You didn't wake up screaming last night. He says, no, no. It was an emotional day. You just probably went ahead and you probably slept through it. She says, the next night I stayed up all night. And the night after that. She says, the last few weeks, or the first few weeks in my marriage to my husband, he slept through the night because you listened to him. You listened to him. And this time he was able to tape the entire thing. And I think this is the lesson of the Shema Yisrael. How do we know when a listening is listening really and not hearing? Rabbi Lam says, it's when it leads to v'haftas Hashem Elokecha b'chol avavcha b'chol nafshachem. When it's a listening that leads to a love, when it leads to an empathy, to a connection to somebody else, that's when you know, that's when you're really listening and not just hearing.